Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, September 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we will explore the process of fermentation. And here to help us explain, a host of folks from Sunday's Berkshire Fermentation Festival, Adam Elabd of Yes Folk Tonics, Jack Peel of Jacuterie. They join Matty Elling and Mark Phillips of Hosta Hill in the studio. If you have a question about fermentation, and who doesn't, you'll want to give us a call at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Fermentation 101 coming up. It's handy. I've been fermenting for about 30 years. Your call's coming up on Vox Pop. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we detail the process of fermentation with four folks from this Sunday's Berkshire Fermentation Festival. First up is Adam Elabd. No? Say it. Yeah, I got it right. Elabd? Of Yes Folk Tonics. It's a family-run brewery in Troy, New York, specializing in living tonic beverages. And we'll talk about that coming up. It offers barrel-fermented kombucha, aged vinegar, and sparkling coffee tonic. Jack Peel is with Jacuterie, a charcuterie company based at Herondale Farm in Ankrumdale, New York. The company makes salami, sausages, bacon, and other dry-cured meats at its family farm using locally-raised meats. Matty Elling and Mark Phillips are with Hosta Hill. The company produces a variety of sauerkrauts, kimchi, hot sauces, and tonics in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Matty and Mark are also helping to organize the fourth annual Berkshire Fermentation Festival being held this Sunday from 10 to 4 at the Great Barrington Fairgrounds. Adam, Jack, Matty, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Howdy. Good to be here.
Are you all excited?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very excited.
I'm excited. The food so far, the pregame food has been excellent. By the way, the number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about fermentation, 800-348-2551. Well, let's start with Matty and Mark from Hosta Hill. You're one of the founders. You're both founders of this fermentation festival now in the fourth year.
Yep.
What possessed you to do this?
Well, yeah, so we've been running Hosta Hill for the past 7 years, and I guess it was about 5 years ago we went to the first annual Boston Fermentation Festival, and after going to that one, it was a great event with a few different producers of fermented vegetables and kombuchas and some sourdough bread people, and we just thought, why not have something like this in the Berkshires? So, the next year we got it together and we put on the fermentation festival there, and it's been at the fairgrounds since year one, and we're really excited that it's had a great turnout from the very beginning.
And yeah. It's improving?
It's surely improving.
Is this a groundswell of support for fermentation, Mark?
Totally.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really remarkable to see around the country there's fermentation festivals happening in various cities. Boston actually just had a really big fermentation festival last weekend, and we're really excited to follow up on that energy this coming Sunday.
Tell us about Hosta Hill.
Hosta Hill was started about 7 years ago by Matty and Abe together, and I've been working with Hosta Hill for about a year and a half, and we produce some really high-quality sauerkrauts, kimchi, all naturally fermented vegetables.
Matty, why the interest in fermentation? Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm just wondering how you got hooked on this.
How we got hooked on it, yeah. So, you know, Abe and I met about 8 years ago, and we were both living in the Berkshires, and there's a great food scene happening in the Berkshires with farms and food producers. And we were actually working with Berkshire Blue Cheese, helping make and sell their cheese at markets.
Yeah.
And we were going to markets every week, and we were also fermenting vegetables, and we were brewing beer and making honey wines and making some other cheeses, and we were just very enthusiastic about fermentation and that whole world. And going to the market every weekend, we were looking around, and no one was doing sauerkrauts and kimchi, so we thought, let's bring these to the market. And yeah, so when we first started, we just had our sauerkraut variety and our crimson kraut. So that was the very beginning. That was kind of what inspired us.
But is it a passion for you?
It is some sort of passion, yeah, I would say so.
What do you mean some sort of passion?
I mean, Yeah, it's a passion. I feel like it's evolved over the past few years. Those first few years, I was very passionate and very involved in it, and now it's just evolved. Yeah. Like my role in the business, and and bringing Mark on. Mark came and started working with us over a year ago, and I felt like it was so great to have him because he was newly into fermentation a few years ago, and so he had that fresh energy of fermentation enthusiasm that like maybe had dwindled a little with Ava. Like we were, you know, we had starting the business and running the business and like maybe on the verge of burnout. So it's been great to have some fresh energy.
Now, can you tell a rookie fermenter when you see one? I mean, obviously he was a little rough around the edges, yeah?
Maybe, but yeah, he's...
What have you picked up as to the fermentation process now, Mark, that you didn't know in the beginning?
I am continually amazed by how simple and easy it is to ferment vegetables. It's one of the more popular ways to preserve vegetables because of how simple and delicious the results are.
Hmm. All right. Well, we will talk about that process coming up. But first, let's meet the other guests on this program. Adam Elabd, and I'm going to try to say your name properly throughout the show, of Yes Folk Tonics. That's in Troy, New York. How long have you been in the biz?
So as Yes Folk, it's been about a year and a half just over that we've been brewing together as a family. It's me and my two brothers-in-law and wife and my sister-in-law who also helps. And so as Yes Folk, yeah, it's been about a year and a half, a little bit more that we've been putting things out there. My background is in education and writing about fermentation more, so I spent a lot of time going around to different fermentation
By the way, I'm
festivals.
Sorry, you have the droopy mic. You drew the short one. Straw, That's and right. Throughout the show, you'll be fixing that like a roadie. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so my wife and I moved out from California about 2.5 years ago, and I was doing a lot of teaching, going to fermentation festivals and giving workshops and talks, and I also wrote a recipe book on fermentation. And when we moved out here, I started doing some of that as well, but it was clear that there was still just a lot of room to even be making things and sharing them. In California, there's a lot of people making a lot of great stuff. And out here, there are a few people making really great things. And so it was nice to feel like we had something to offer that maybe wasn't happening in our area. And we started making larger batches of kombucha and some different fermented beverages and sharing them in the region. And people have been responding well to it, so just keep doing it.
Have you experienced any culture shock coming from California to upstate New York?
No, not really. It's interesting. The differences are interesting, and the trends are different, and the cold is definitely shocking.
Yeah.
It's more than the culture.
Trust me, you won't get used to it either.
But, you know, everybody's geared up now. Everybody's suited up. We've got extra long johns and all the good stuff that keeps you alive through the winter.
So, Yes Folk Tonics, you make living tonic beverages.
Correct.
Sell me on why I would want to drink a living tonic beverage.
Well, hopefully just because it's delicious, foremost.
That's good.
Yeah. So we try to make everything with the intent of having it be as vital and vibrant and alive and beneficial as possible.
Beneficial in what way?
Beneficial to health and well-being. So, you know, one of the things about fermented foods is that apart from being exciting gastronomically, they're also exciting and healthful gastrointestinally. Hmm. And so what we do, we're making things that are tonic beverages. A tonic is something that is not as concentrated or potent as a medicine that you take when you're in a state of illness. A tonic is something that you take to keep and to promote and preserve a general state of well-being. And a beverage can be a tonic, a food could be a tonic, fermented foods, I think really all of them could be considered tonic because they promote and preserve a state of well-being in the digestive system and the rest of the body.
By the way, if you out there have a question about fermentation, our number here, it's a call-in show. It's 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And then the other guy, Jack Peel from Jacquouterie in Ankrumdale, New York. The sausage is good, man.
Thanks.
It's really good. Tell us about what you do.
So, Jacuterie, we do cured salamis mainly. We also do a lot of fresh sausages and bacon. On the fermentation side, salami is really what we're fermenting.
Yeah.
We do everything at my family farm, my dad's farm, Herondale Farm in Ancrumdale.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the pork is raised there. We do also source pork from other local farms in the Northeast. And our mission is to create really traditional European styles of salami. But in New York, using as many local ingredients as possible.
The food, I mean, that sausage is really, tell us about that one that
Thanks.
You brought.
So this one that I have here today is our saucisson provençal, which is our French style. It's definitely one of our most popular. It's an all pork salami. It's fermented and dry cured, and it has herbs de Provence, a little bit of garlic and black pepper. And the Herbes de Provence is our own blend of it. We tried using some premix, but the best is to do as much as possible. We use lavender, thyme, rosemary, basil, fennel, a little marjoram, and summer savory in the blend. So there's a lot of herbs, a lot going on in it. It comes out really nice.
It sure does. All right, we'll take a break here, 800-348-2551, and then we'll try some food, and we'll talk about the Berkshire Fermentation Festival, which is coming up this weekend. 800-348-2551 if you want to join the conversation. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551 is the number. Jack Peel, Matty Elling, Mark Phillips, and Adam Elobd are here, and we are talking about fermented goodies, and the goodies are really good. First of all, the peanut butter sandwich, Matty.
Peanut butter and kimchi sandwich.
Oh my gosh, that's a great combination. Tell us all about it.
Well, there's some discrepancies on who came up with it originally.
But you'll take credit.
Yeah. Actually, Abe's mom, it's like kind of a twist on her recipe of peanut butter and sliced onion sandwiches.
Mm.
And so we had started making our kimchi, and it has lots of onions and cabbage and carrots and radish, and it has a pepper paste. And it pairs really well with nut butter, whether it's peanut butter or almond butter or any kind of mixed nut butter. Yeah, it's kind of like spicy pad thai. You know, the spice and the peanuts. And
I'm loving it. And the bread is fantastic,
yeah, and
too.
So the bread is on Berkshire Mound Bakery bread, right in Housatonic, and they'll be at the festival as well. It's on their today's freshly baked sesame loaf there.
Really, really tasty stuff. And the beverage here, Adam, very nice. What is it?
So what we're drinking is our Osmanthus Oolong Kombucha, and we make a few different kombuchas, primarily with single origin, single varietal teas, and we just brew that one tea up and ferment it in the barrel and serve it straight. We don't flavor or back sweeten. Every once in a while we'll get wild and have fun and make something funky, but for the most part we're really about highlighting and bringing out the beverage, the tea itself.
It has a natural sweetness. It's really nice.
Yeah, and it has a real fruitiness to it as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like peach notes in it that are just coming from the tea. So
the number here is 800-348-2551. We are joined today by folks from the Berkshire Fermentation Festival. It's the fourth annual, you know, and it's the Great Barrington Fairgrounds on Sunday in the morning through the afternoon. And Matty, you and Mark were part of the start of this. Tell us what we can expect.
Yeah, so we have over 50 vendors with food and crafts and prepared food. We have some great music that will be played all day, some live music. We have a science corner with Ben Wolf from Tufts University is going to be bringing a little mini lab to be looking at some bacterias under microscopes,
uh-huh,
which is really cool. We have a kids' corner with all sorts of kids' activities. Jenny from the Berkshire Co-op's Nutrition Center is doing ginger bugs with the kids. And then there's also a fermentation coloring book that's going to be presented at the Ferment Fest for the kids.
Fermentation coloring book?
Yeah, yeah. What, you'll have to come and check it out.
What kind of subjects are we talking
maybe
about
Maybe like
here?
Pickles in jars.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, bubbles and jars and utensils and
Cool.
else? We have a day full of presentations and workshops, and the most exciting, one of the most exciting people that are coming are is Sander Katz, who's kind of the guru of fermentation in America these days. Yeah, so Mark, do you want to talk about some of the workshops and presentations in more depth?
Yeah, sure. We have a bunch of experts in their fields coming from all over the Northeast. We will have our friend Cheryl Passwater from New York City, who is with Contraband Ferments, demonstrating the process for making miso, which is a Japanese fermented bean paste, which we have here today. Mm-hmm. We will have a very exciting presentation from Dr. Anne Yonatani on natto, which is another kind of infamous among fermenters, Japanese fermented bean.
Why is it infamous?
It's, you know, I actually haven't smelled it myself. Has anyone here smelled natto in person before?
No.
Yeah, it's it has like an ammonia-ish quality to it. Mm. And when it's made right, that's pretty mild, but it's also very sort of sticky and slimy.
Ah.
It's something that you can learn to love and crave.
Yeah, it sounds appetizing, yeah. I'll say that. The ammonia or the slimy. This is delicious. This, what you're passing around here, this is miso.
Yeah, there's five different types of misos there, one of which is from Rhapsody Foods, which is a Vermont-based producer. And they'll be at the fest. We also have South River miso on there. And then there's three others, which I made myself, a cashew miso, a sunflower seed butter miso, and an azuki bean miso.
The one I just tried on the closest to you, Adam, what is that?
Cashew.
My gosh, that's amazing stuff.
Really good.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
That was really good.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. The Berkshire Fermentation Festival is Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it looks like, 20, 30 vendors and people involved with this thing?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of vendors. I think 50 plus coming from really representing kind of the full spectrum of fermentation in the Berkshires, which for us is really what this festival is all about. We call it a celebration of all things cultured. So it's really an amazing demonstration of how diverse fermentation is in the food system. We have everything from beverages to breads and charcuterie, as we have here in the studio, and it's a lot of fun and a really great community of people.
Well, let's get to the phones and take a few calls. 800-348-2551. Daniel in Poughkeepsie. Daniel, you're on. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. I was recently diagnosed with a wheat allergy. I'm not gluten-free, but I had two questions for you. One is what can I drink for, you know, wheat, beers, and other alcohols and the fermentation process that goes with that? And the second question is last night I was told I might be able to eat sourdough bread because of the fermentation of the sourdough.
Okay, who wants that?
Do you want to answer, Adam, the alcohol question?
Yeah, so there are some beers that are being made now to be gluten-free. But honestly, you know, cider and wine and mead are already naturally gluten-free and have never even seen any grain with gluten. So there's a lot of really exciting stuff that you can drink that you don't have to worry about gluten at all with.
Yeah, and at the festival, if you are coming out this weekend, we have Karst Cider House, who they do, they ferment apples and make various ciders and apple wines, and also Artisan Beverage Co-op, they do meads and different flavored awesome honey wines.
Well, Daniel, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday, and we talk fermentation today. Kellen in Glens Falls. Kellen, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay, excellent. I was calling because I've had kombucha a couple of times, but if I remember right, I feel like it was just a little too, like, acidic for me, but maybe I could acquire a taste for it. I was wondering what is a good way to get introduced to it, and also what are the health benefits of it, because I hear it's good for your insides, but I'm not sure of the specifics.
Okay. And remember, no one here is a doctor, right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll go slightly anecdotal, but there's a lot of experience here at the table. So go ahead.
So as far as the acidity, kombucha, part of the culture of kombucha is Acetobacter, which is the same bacteria that makes vinegar. It makes, you know, raw apple cider vinegar as well as any other kind of vinegar. And it's really like anything. You know, you can make a stew and add way too much salt and have it be too salty. With kombucha, if you let it ferment too long, it can get too acidic. And then maybe not might not be too easy on the stomach if you're drinking 12 ounces of it. So for one, it's just about getting a kombucha that's not overly acidic. And we at Yes Folk, we really try to find balance there. The acids that are formed by fermentation do have benefits, similar to the benefits of apple cider vinegar, which are well documented. And so it's good to have those acids, but you want it to be in a quantity that your stomach can also tolerate.
Yeah.
But if you're up in Glens Falls, you can always pass by Common Roots at South Glens Falls, and they have our kombucha there. You could try it out there, and hopefully you'll find something that's a little bit easier for your stomach.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Kellen. We appreciate the call. It's Food Friday, 800-348-2551. Adam Elabd, Jack Peel, Maddie Elling, and Mark Phillips here. They are all part of the Berkshire Fermentation Festival, which sounds like a good time. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Great Barrington Fairgrounds. Let's go over to Debbie in Windsor, Mass. Debbie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm familiar with making kombucha successfully. It's wonderful, delicious, but my dilemma is I cannot drink caffeine, say, after noontime. It'll keep me awake. And from what I read, kombucha would not work with decaffeinated tea. And do you think that's true?
So that's a question with a long answer and conversation that we can get into as far as whether or not you can make kombucha with non-caffeinated tea. The culture seems to prefer a certain amount of tannins and caffeine, which the tea plant has. We're actually passing a can around now made with a plant called yopon, which is related to yerba mate, and it grows here in Texas through Florida, in right here in North America.
I love this.
And it has less caffeine than the tea plant, so it has enough for kombucha to ferment well, but not so much that you really get as much of a caffeine buzz from it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, you know, we make kombucha and drink it at home and at the brewery all the time, but we also make water kefir, and there's a lot of fermented beverages out there that
What's
you could
kefir?
Make at home. So water kefir is a combination of yeast and lactic acid bacteria, as opposed to kombucha, which is a combination of yeast and acetic acid creating bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can make water kefir with herbs, with fruit juice, with coconut water, that would be completely caffeine-free and super probiotic. If you're really into getting into the experimentation and you want to dig in, I've had success making kombucha with non-caffeinated herbal
you
blends.
You have had success, you said?
Yeah, the main issue is that from generation to generation, meaning like from batch to batch, the culture eventually ends up getting weaker. So it's not good for the longevity of your culture, but it is totally possible.
Okay, that's good to know. And what was the name of it? Yoplum?
Yopon. It's spelled Yaupon.
Awesome. I will check that out. And I did make mead last year, too, and it was fantastic. Very high alcohol content, though. It was quite surprising.
Yeah, you can make... I've made some pretty boozy meads in my day, too, for sure.
Oh, yeah. So it's time to do it again. Well, thank you very much. Great show.
Thanks, Debbie. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Adam, how long have you been actually brewing?
I started back in around 2011. I was studying herbalism at the time, and when you study natural medicine and holistic healing, you invariably end up learning about the benefits of fermented foods, and sort of started going down the rabbit hole then. Yeah,
that's good. And Mark, you said before the show that you have a pot of sauerkraut down there?
Yeah, that's right. I brought my 7.5-liter German-style harsh crock filled with some very fresh sauerkraut, just like your great, great, great grandmother used to make.
I come of German stock, so I know of what you speak. So I guess we could try it at some point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's go take another call, and then we'll try some sauerkraut. 800-348-2551 is the number. Barbara in Monticello. Barbara, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been trying to cook with only organics, and I want to know, is it possible to make your own fermented black beans for Asian cooking?
Anybody?
Yeah, so maybe I could ask you to clarify a little bit more. Are you talking about something like miso or something different?
No, they're black beans. There's a lot of like fermented black bean sauces, and they use just fermented black beans. But a lot of the products come from China, and I'm kind of skeptical about using them. Is there a way to just ferment beans?
Yes, for sure, there is a way. I think the ferment you're talking about is maybe doubanjiang, and you can definitely find resources online for it. I don't have off the top of my head the knowledge that you're looking for, but I know that if you check out The Art of Fermentation, which is a book by Sandor Katz, who will be there at the festival this weekend, he has a passage in the book about this, which would be a great point of departure for you in your learning journey.
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
You're so
Thanks
welcome.
Thanks a lot for the call. It's Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. The Berkshire Fermentation Festival is here, and we're learning a lot about fermentation today on the program. Susan in Troy. Hello, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I've tried fermenting some pickles and some vegetables, and everything's very cloudy, and when I see some fermented products for sale at farmers market, they're spotlessly clear. And I don't know if I didn't ferment it long enough. And one time there was a little bit of slime on top and I threw it out. So I don't know if I'm doing something wrong or is it normally cloudy like that?
Maddie?
Sure. Cloudiness is a kind of natural thing that happens in fermentation, but you can avoid it. Are you, when you're fermenting your vegetables, are you using like a water brine? Or are you just salting your vegetables?
Yeah.
You're adding water?
No, salt and water.
Okay, yeah. So one thing I would say is the way we make our sauerkrauts and kimchi, we just salt our vegetables, spice them, and pack them into vessels for fermentation. And so we don't add any water. We're not really dealing with that cloudiness. So that's maybe one way to avoid it. Mark, can you talk about the cloudiness? Because I know, like, I see that a lot with pickles. When pickles are in, I think of the cloudiness like when they're in a brine, like a watery brine. And Mark is a pickle guy, more of a classic pickle guy.
Yeah, I definitely have been called pickle guy before. Cloudiness is kind of a natural outcome of fermentation, so I would first encourage you to not be concerned of it as a symptom of something wrong. I would invite you rather to rely on your taste buds and to try the ferment and to explore the taste. And if you're getting good results taste-wise, then that's the most important thing to focus on. Cloudiness does happen. It's not something to worry about.
What about the slime?
Slime, ferments can sometimes get slimier as they ferment. And yes, that's not the most compelling.
No, it's visually
texture
not compelling.
Or visual.
Yeah.
That's, you know, to be honest, part of the fun alchemy of fermentation is that there are sometimes these results that we just don't understand, and there needs to be some faith in the process.
Do you ever get violently ill on some of these experiments?
The nice thing, at least about fermented vegetables, is that there has never been a documented case of any foodborne illness related to fermented vegetables.
Oh.
I can't speak to tonics or charcuterie. Maybe our guests over here could.
Well, I don't want to ask, has anyone gotten sick on the sausage, Jack? But
no one's gotten sick.
Sausage is amazing. I got to tell you, I am hooked on this. And we have to try it maybe with a little sauerkraut.
It'd be delicious with a little sauerkraut. And to answer that question a little bit about the foodborne illness is one of the reasons we ferment it is to prevent that.
Really?
And we encourage beneficial bacteria to grow to essentially eliminate the possibility for harmful bacteria to grow.
All right. Susan, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a break here and try some sausage and some sauerkraut and some other things. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Fermentation on Food Friday. We'll be back. Well, mission accomplished. The sausage with the sauerkraut is outstanding. It's a Food Friday. We talk fermentation today with the folks who will be involved with the Berkshire Fermentation Festival, which is Sunday, and that is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Great Barrington Fairgrounds. Wow, this stuff from Hosta Hill is the red cabbage.
The crimson kraut.
It looks it looks a little like Grandma made, but it's a little crispier. Hers kind of got a little soggy.
That can happen to sauerkraut.
Some snap to it.
Yeah, we like it. We like it crunchy and crispy.
It's got a little spice, too.
Yeah, there's a little red pepper flake in there. So when we first started, I was saying we were making our plain kraut and our crimson kraut. And actually, the name we were calling the crimson kimchi originally.
Ah.
So that's, it's definitely not a traditional style kimchi. I call it, if anything, like an American style kimchi.
And there's an orange one here as well?
And that's the curry kraut. So that's the curried sauerkraut with kimchi pepper.
Oh, I got to try that. And the other one's standard.
The other one's plain cabbage and sea salt, and that's it. And again, I was saying we don't add any water to any of our ferments. They create their own brine naturally. We salt them, and the salt pulls all the nice liquid out of the vegetables, and they essentially create their own brine.
How long does it take to make this?
How long does it take to make sauerkraut?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a flexible answer. So we ferment our vegetables anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. So what we're really looking for, you know, Jack was talking about with foodborne illnesses and his salami process and with the fermentation. It's all about acidity. So we need to hit a certain mark of acidity for it to be considered safe.
How do you check it?
We use a pH meter. So we drip a little of the brine onto a pH meter, and it tests the pH, and we're able to look at that. And
where do you want to be on the scale, the acidity scale?
It's about like 4.3. What is it for your products, Jack?
We have to reach a minimum of 5.3. I prefer it to be a little bit less, maybe about 5.15. You don't really want to go below 5 for the finished product because then it'll be very acidic and very tart.
Right,
so there's a balance there.
Makes sense for your meat, yeah.
During the fermentation, however, we get it quite low.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes down to maybe 4.7, and then it rises as it dries because we ferment for about 48 hours, and then it dries for another 5 weeks for these. If we do a big salami, it's 2 months, 3 months. So the pH changes constantly.
Yeah, so this is like a little scientific side of it all.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Ben Wolf is going to be there with his science corner talking about the scientific side of things. And, you know, like the Yes Folk tonics are also acidic. And I'm sure you guys are going for a certain acidity, too, for them to be considered safe.
Yeah, it's about the same as what you were saying, like below 4.3. It ends up being a lot lower than that. Anyways, and the nice thing is, really, if you're fermenting at home, you don't really have to worry about that. I knew how to use a pH meter, but never used one for years of fermentation. It's only really when you're making things that you're going to be sharing with the greater public that you want to, make sure that you're keeping track of everything and having like good markers to be able to check where things are at. But you don't have to be discouraged if you're just trying to make some stuff at home.
You mentioned fermenting at home. We saw the craft brew explosion in the last 20 years. Is this also picking up steam as well?
Definitely. Yeah, whether it's making kombucha at home or making sauerkraut or kimchi or pickles at home, it's definitely a fun and hot thing to do. I don't know about making salami at home. I mean, we definitely know some people
in
our neck of
the
woods.
I don't think you can do it that well at home. That is some of the best sausage right there.
You need some special equipment to do it, but you can definitely do it at home. I started doing it at home.
Cool.
That's how I started. So.
And does everybody, you know, the real crazies out there carry a 45-pound thing around with sauerkraut, Mark, like you do?
That might be more of a personal characteristic.
A little obsession there. And so you brought it, and is this it on the big plate?
Yeah. That's
and so how does this differ from the other Hasta Hill, the light-colored sauerkraut?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's got different spices and a slightly different cut, and I fermented it in this really beautiful ceramic German-style crock, which traditional homesteaders might have used. But ultimately, the process is no different from what commercial fermentation producers are doing, which is just traditional fermentation with salt and vegetables.
I love that. I mean, I think this is fantastic stuff. Let's take a call here. 800-348-2551. Jesse and Troy. Jesse.
Hi, I had a question. Someone earlier had mentioned mead. I know that mead is fermented with honey and water, and I was wondering if anyone has ever heard of someone doing something similar with maple syrup. I've never heard of it, and before I give it a try, I figured I'd ask if that's not something that's like known to come out disgustingly or something.
All right, anybody want to try that?
Sounds good.
I have heard of people making spirits, I believe, with maple syrup. So there is some fermentation happening there, and then they're distilling it. I'm not sure whether it would be the same process as doing a mead, which is not distilled, where it's purely just fermented.
I've definitely played around with making what I would, for lack of a better term, would call maple mead or maple wine. You just get a nice ratio of maple syrup and water going. And then you just add with honey. You can often use the wild yeast that's on the honey to ferment it into mead. Maple comes pasteurized typically when you buy it from someone who's producing maple syrup. So you're gonna have to add some kind of yeast. You could add some wild yeast, or you could buy some. And you definitely can have some delicious results for sure.
Oh, all right, I'll give it a try.
All right, Jesse, thanks. Call us back. Let us know how you did. Our number is 800-348-2551. Wutendi in Glenville, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about my sauerkraut that is cooking in my big crock. So when it's done, I learned how to make it from an old Polish neighbor. And should I can it? What should I do with it?
Mark's saying, no, don't can it. If you want to keep the beneficial bacteria and all the good bacteria that are so healing to the body there, then definitely don't can it, because that's where you basically pasteurize it and you kill all the live cultures. So what we do at Hasta Hill, this is how, you know, Mark can talk about his ferments too that he makes, but we ferment them. And then we pack them into our jars, whether it's 16-ounce jar or gallon size, and then we put them in the fridge. There's no canning. There's no hot packing. So we keep them raw and live. And then we pretty much put a 6-month best-by date on them from the day we pack. But, you know, they never really go bad. They eventually will soften up after, like, many, many months. They'll get a little more acidic. So they'll just get more funky. But they can live in your fridge for a long time. So, yeah, then, you know, you'd have to put them either in your fridge or somewhere cool, like your basement.
Okay, so right now I'm still skimming the scum off the top. If I pack them in a large jar, do I do the same thing, you know, really press it down, and should there be liquid on top?
Yeah, it'd be great if you have enough liquid to definitely make sure they're topped with some nice liquid, because if not, they'll just dry out a little. And again, that's fine when you go to open that jar. Just if anything looks dry or discolored, you can just take that off, and everything underneath should be great.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, Wendy.
Great, I'll have to... Yes.
Our call screener had you down as Wutendi, which I think is a great name, too. Maybe we should call you that from now on.
Definitely changing it.
Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Allison, if that is your name. Allison in Red Hook, you're on.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm a regular lifetime member of the Berkshire Co-op, so of course I have had the pleasure of your products for a long time, and I'll hope to make it up this weekend. But I had a question that could benefit some of the callers from the beginning of this session, and it was whether you've experimented and found that organic produce used plus sea salt with beneficial minerals could be like a chemistry experiment. I'm personally pro-organic, but I mean, for other people, whether it might inhibit that cloudiness. I was curious if anyone had experimented if that makes a difference. I mean, it makes a difference in your health, but I mean, does it make a difference in the cloudiness? I was curious, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know what effect it would necessarily have on the cloudiness, but uh-huh. I can definitely agree with you that it's better. You'll get better results from using higher quality vegetables and pure sea salts. And also, while we are
especially because the sea salt would have added minerals that are stripped out of the other salts. So that's what I was thinking. You know, that it's a more complete picture chemically too.
Totally.
In the end, fermentation is really about feeding microorganisms. So the same way that we think about our own nutrition and about having, you know, wholesome foods with definitely like an increased range or a greater range of minerals and micronutrients, you can think of the yeast and bacteria fermentation as little pets, and people spend a lot of money on their dog food, and so if you're making something to feed the microorganisms, which you're then going to eat, then it only makes sense to try to give them the best stuff you can get.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah, and the last thing I didn't mention is the water. I mean, of course, you're saying you don't use water, but like maybe in pickles or whatever, that the water should be a live kind of water, whether spring water or something. You know what I mean? Whatever you've got access to, well water, whatever you can get that is a more live water than treated with chlorine, because the chlorine chemically could, slow down the process too. I mean, all those things, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Clean water, clean either filtered or good quality water that you're getting from somewhere is super important.
Adam, you came up with a great idea. Every time my kids say I want a pet, I'll just be like, "Oh, microbes! Here, have a jar. Have some fun.
Give them some SCOBY.
Jar and a head of cabbage. Yeah.
So much cheaper." Over to who's been waiting longest here? Let's go to Jillian in Glendale. You're on.
Hey, I'm a huge lover of hot sauerkraut, and especially Hasta Hill sauerkraut. So yummy. And I'm just curious, what is the difference in the process between sauerkraut and pickles? I've made sauerkraut before. I don't know much about pickling, but how do they differ?
Yeah, so same type of fermentation. In both cases, you're actually using the bacteria that are already living on the vegetables. You're creating the right conditions for them. And then as Adam just hinted at, you're creating this environment where you can feed the microorganisms. And so the main difference is really with sauerkraut, you're directly salting shredded cabbage, which draws the brine out, and then the cabbage ferments in that brine. And then with cucumber pickles, or maybe dilly beans or another type of whole vegetable pickle, you are creating a salt brine from water and salt and actually submerging the vegetables in that brine.
Something's going on. Do you have a cappuccino machine going on there, Jillian?
Yeah, I have a baby.
Oh, that'll do it.
AKA baby,
Thanks for the call. Over to Mike. Mike in South Hadley. Mike, you're on.
How you doing? I'm calling about different ways of preserving pork belly, especially fresh belly.
Sure. How are you? So do you have a specific question on that? Or?
What would make it last longer? You know, I just don't want to smoke it. I've heard of bacon.
Sure. So there's a couple of different ways that we do it. We do two different preserved pork belly products, I would say. We do bacon, which is smoked, but you salt it and cure it first. And then the other is a pancetta, which is dry cured, salted. And you can ferment it. Usually it's not fermented. Usually what we would do with a pork belly for pancetta, say, is we would salt it, put a little salt, sugar, some seasoning, let it salt for 5 or 10 days, then take it out and then hang it in our curing chamber to dry it. But you can get some really cool flavors and really cool results if you let it ferment a little bit. So you can do that by naturally just hang after you've salted it, hanging it in a warm room that's, you know, not particularly warm, but 65, 70 degrees Fahrenheit for 24, 36 hours before you dry it, which will get some natural yeasts on it. It'll ferment the outside a little bit. What I've done is I've actually taken some of the cultures which we use for our salami production, and you can get these. They're readily available from various sources, and just sprinkle a little bit on the pork belly
before you hang it, and then roll it up. Tie it really tightly so you get that really nice round pancetta, and that gives it a really nice sweetness, really beautiful flavor on it.
Now, when you make pancetta, how long? I saw a show where they do it for years.
Yeah, it varies. I mean, we do some pancettas, which we'll do flat, which is a pancetta tesa, and we'll just hang that for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But we've done other ones where we've rolled it, and I've hung it for a year.
Yeah.
And we could have hung it for even longer.
All right, a couple of quick emails here, and then we'll get your contact information for everybody, and then we'll be done. This one is from Rita. Hi, anything particularly fermentable this time of year? Simple? At home?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we're about to get into full-on cabbage season, putting those kinds of crops up like cabbages and roots like carrots and radishes. So you can make all types. You can ferment, you know, slice up cabbage however you like it and add any kind of vegetables, any of the root crops. And also hot peppers. We're in full-on hot pepper season, and you can just puree those with sea salt and make a really easy hot sauce.
Nice. You guys make hot sauces.
We do, yeah. We make a red and a green hot sauce. Our red, they're both made from jalapenos, and one of them has smoked garlic in it.
Ooh.
Which, yeah, Jack's
so good.
Jack's colleague has smoked for us in his smoker. And Mark, do you have any other ideas? There's so much to ferment right now.
Yeah, I would definitely affirm trying to ferment peppers at home.
Yeah.
Peppers are fermented in the same way that you would ferment cabbage, and it's a great way to make a hot sauce that is fun for the whole family during the holidays.
All right, this one's from Maria. We would appreciate you asking the guests to talk about the types of salt they use, along with how, besides impact, flavoring, and other aspects of fermenting cabbage and similar vegetables.
So we pretty much use a sea salt. And I didn't catch the rest of that question.
I'm not sure exactly I understand.
Like, so what other spices that we use?
How, besides impact flavoring, I'm not sure.
What other impacts does salt maybe have in the
fermentation? Oh, I see. Right, what does salt do besides flavor?
Okay. Yeah, well, so the salt, so we're chopping the vegetables, salting them, and the salt is breaking down the cell walls of the vegetables and kind of wilting the vegetables, and it's pulling the brine out of the vegetables. So that's kind of a big part of the process. I feel like there's a more technical version of that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, Mark wants to.
Sure, too. And I would also be curious, Jack, if I know salt is used for charcuterie. Is that right?
Very important.
And what's the, you know, answer there for charcuterie? Are you guys using a higher quality salt?
We use a very nice gray sea salt, which we get from France, actually. And that's harvested from salt pits. So it's not just evaporated from the ocean. This is actually like dug out of pits. And it's really beautiful. It has a lot of other minerals in it. It has the nice thing about that is that it has naturally occurring nitrates in it, which are much better than the factory-made nitrates.
Afraid we'll have to leave it there. Jack Peel, how do people find out more about charcuterie?
So go to charcuterie.com or Facebook or Instagram. We are there.
All right. Maddie and Mark, how do we find out about Hosta Hill?
Yeah, we also have a website, hostahill.com, and we're on Instagram at hostahill and Facebook.
And Adam Elab, Yes Folk Tonics.
Yeah, simply yesfolktonics.com or on Instagram at yesfolk.
All right. Well, listen, best of luck with the Berkshire Fermentation Festival, which starts at 10 a.m. on Sunday, goes until 4 p.m. at the Great Barrington Fairgrounds. Very nice to have you all here. Thank you for coming. Support comes from Landis Arboretum, Esperance, New York, offering plant collections, hiking trails, old growth forest, concerts, classes, and more. LandisArboretum.org. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salt, peppers, and blends. Specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends. RollingRockSalt.com for upcoming events. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York style delicatessen and European style all butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe. Offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with the flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, VivaFreshPasta.com. Thanks again to Adam, Jack, Maddie, and Mark for being here today. Thank you for listening and for some terrific calls. And thanks to Jordan Taylor, our engineer today. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news.